I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I would say that Pete Alonso now has delivered two memorable home runs already early this season.
Yeah.
And what we were talking about in the offseason, what we talked about last week when he did it, down in Houston, is the same thing. He's going to have plenty of opportunities with guys on base in front of him. And he came through again in a major, major way. And before we get into this whole controversy around Keith Hernandez.
There's no controversy. I
want to say this.
Yeah.
All of us Met fans were thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Everyone is thinking, man, this is piss poor hitting. And everybody's up in arms about him saying that off of a hot mic. And I'm like, thank God somebody said it, because I know we were all saying it together. My group text chats were going crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah.
I don't think anybody's really saying that that's a controversy.
No, it gets reported by awful announcing and everything else like that. I don't really care, because he said exactly what we were thinking.
Yeah, so, and of course, you're watching a game as I'm watching a game. It's in the commercial break. It comes back. I am just like everybody else who's addicted to their phones. In the commercial breaks, I'm looking at my phone, and then I hear Keith say something, and I'm like, what?
I heard it straight up, man.
So I rewind it. It's just clear as day, you know.
I wanted to send him a text saying, that's my boy! but you know what? It's great, and it's so true. And he's, at times, he can be so flippant that it's funny and it's entertaining. And when the team was bad all those years,
yeah,
that's what made them so great, is that Ronnie knew how to get either under his skin or knew how to play into him. And that's the beauty of Keith Hernandez. You never know what you're going to get. And I love it. I love him. And I love the fact that Pete Alonso came through again last night. And he's going to have so many opportunities this year, assuming these guys all stay healthy, of course. He's going to have so many. He's not going to come through every single time. I mean, there are going to be times where, you know, we've already seen this, where, you know, they have men on base and he'll either strike out or ground out. But this is twice now where guys got on base in front of him in a huge spot and he came through. And this is what all of us wanted. And I was talking to Fliegelman, who was down in Miami for two games.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was. And we were just talking about it. And he was saying how, you know, Juan Soto, for all the Met fans, by the way, you could probably save more money and take your family on a vacation to Miami, go buy tickets to go see the Mets at the Marlins in beautiful weather,
mm-hmm,
than you would if you wanted to go to opening day.
True.
So he's down there, and he was saying how, yeah, all the fans were jacked up for Juan Soto, all the Met fans were. But he goes, during the game, the guy that got the biggest cheers was Pete Alonso. And I was just saying to him, I said, I think probably the reason for that is that he was drafted by the Mets, he's been cultivated and developed by the Mets, and he's always been a relatively great representative of the franchise.
Yeah, and I also think because of the bad year that he had last year, and then, of course, the huge moment in Milwaukee, but the fan always, they never abandoned him. The Mets fan never abandoned him. They always wanted to know, hey, we still got your back. We still wanted you here. We still love the fact that you're here. We wish it was a long-term deal. They just, and they love him like they love David Wright, and we, you know, when Daryl Strawberry was here and hitting all the home runs before he went to LA.
Like a lesser known person or player would be Wilbur Flores.
Well, yeah, and he had that one sort of moment that thrust him into that whole stratosphere, because he was crying because he didn't want to leave the organization, which endeared him to the fan base. But yeah, I'm not surprised at that at all. The thing I am surprised at, and I'm sort of just as watching the games, you know, when certain guys get up to the plate, you either got confidence in them or you don't. Last year was almost an entire year I had zero confidence in Pete Alonso. And just the way he looks at the plate and fouling pitches off, going the opposite way, obviously hits this bomb to center field yesterday. He just looks so much more confident and in control at the plate early on this year than he looked all of last year. And that, to me, is the best part of this. Now, you know, it's a catch-22, because if he does have the year that he's capable of behind Juan Soto and keeps this up, he's gone. Like, all the Met fans that are cheering for him.
Doesn't matter. I mean, I'm in the now right now. I wanted him on the team, and I wanted him on the team for this specific reason. And I wanted him to be able to show Met fans that he can come through like he did in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he had a horrendous year. We know that. And he has every incentive to play great this year and to have a big year. And, again, we're still early, but this is what I envisioned. I think this is what all Met fans envisioned, was just having an opportunity to come through in big moments. And he's done it twice now in two big spots. And one was a grand slam, and this is a three-run homer to tie the game. So I'm just, I don't want to say I'm giddy, but I'm happy to see what I'm seeing from this group of guys and the way they're just trying to figure it all out. You know, it's been a little bit of a choppy start to their five-game season, and it's, or six-game season. It's been all over the place, and there's a little bit of poor fielding, better pitching than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clutch hitting has come through from time to time, and, you know, they come home with a winning record. It's a winning record, right?
No, they're 3-3. Yeah, 500, 3-3.
So they come home, but they needed to win the game. They needed to win the series. And hopefully Friday the weather cooperates. I don't know if it will or not. It looks like the weekend's not going to be great. But this is always a reminder, because we always talk about how the weather has changed. Well, not so much, not yet.
No, it's certainly the spring is just, you know, for lack of a better term, putting the tip in. You know, it's not, it's kind of just messing with us. You know, it's not really going for the full pour right now. So we need to get there. We need to get to the 60 degrees every single day. Yeah. So think about the difference between Pete Alonso striking out in that situation, the Mets losing 4-1, and then coming home for opening day on Friday, as opposed to him tying the game and then winning in extra innings. And by the way, you know, they could have very easily lost in extra innings, too. They got first and third, nobody out. They don't score in the 10th, you know, and then they have to make, you know, more miracle plays and gun down another runner at home to get out of the bottom of the 10th.
And they actually won a challenge.
Yeah, right.
Which is amazing.
And Luis Torrens, I mean, obviously we want Francisco Alvarez back, and he can be dynamic offensively when he's on. But Luis Torrens defensively has been a clinic out there to start the season. And the one they're showing now, obviously, was, you know, Lindor, perfect throw. But the one previous to that where they won the challenge, bad throw by Beatty. Torrens does this, you know, miracle turnaround, make the tag before he touches the plate. And he's been throwing guys out at second. He's been working great with this staff. I mean, he has been invaluable in the first six games for this team.
No, without question. And he's also had some big hits.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other thing. And, you know, you don't expect it to continue, but the defense can continue. That will not go away anytime soon. I mean, that's just part and parcel to who he is as a catcher. So it's one of those things that you don't realize it until he gets involved, or he throws some people out, or he makes a play like he did yesterday with the tag. I mean, that's what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be the backup catcher and the defensive stalwart and a guy that can handle the pitching staff. And he is delivering on everything. And that's good news for the Mets, because it shows you that they do have depth.
Yeah. And you know, Keith obviously gets all the attention for the piss poor hitting comment. But he was on, and I like when he like identifies guys and the issues that they're having and they're a little bit off. And he was making those comments late in the game about Lindor and Soto, how they're just a little bit off, just a little bit off. And Lindor is like, his front shoulder's flying out a little bit. He's making these types of, you know, analysis with these guys. And, you know, Francisco Lindor, sure, he gets a hit yesterday, but he's still completely he's just lost. He's not himself. It's another beginning of the season where he's not himself. He'll get there, but it's just fascinating to me that he never gets off to a good start. I'm not worried about him, but I am starting to worry about Mark Vientos a little bit, because he has been miserable.
Yes.
I mean, defensively, offensively, he looks nothing like the confident superstar in the making he was last year. So it's just, I mean, it's early, and I still believe in him, but man.
Don't give up yet. It's only six games.
I'm not giving up. This has been really bad.
Left. They got 156 games.
This has been really bad for him, though, man.
I know. Well,
you don't want it to snowball, you know?
You know what? They're all going to go through it, man. They're all going to go through it at some point in time, just like the basketball players go through the shooting woes, just like the hockey players can't score goals. Just like the quarterbacks can't throw touchdown passes, it happens.
It seems likely at this point the Marlins are going to be looking to move him, which is just ridiculous. I mean, the Marlins should just fold up shop.
They're a joke.
Every time they get a good player, it's going to be about moving him. Now, Alcantara, just before we get into the details of what is being said here, he is under contract for this year,
mm-hmm.
next year,
And then there is a team option for 2027.
You got to give up. Before you even ask me the question, I think that that's three, possibly four top 10 prospects.
I mean, dude.
It's a massive haul.
And this is what I mean about the Marlins should be folding up shop. The guy, he's not hitting his free agency this year.
Yeah.
He's under control for two and a half seasons. I mean, I guess three if you count this year. This whole year, next whole year, and then the team option at $21 million, which is a freebie. So it's guaranteed you'd be picking that up. Even if he had an injury, you'd still rather pay him $20 million with the potential that he has at age 31. So anyway, you got him basically under control for 3 years. Let me get you some of the stuff from Puma here talking about this. I'm not going to read the whole thing word for word, but basically, if Alcantara's available, the Mets will undoubtedly be paying attention. Let me get some quotes from some of the players here. This is Soto. Soto, quote, and I find it odd that Lindor chimed in on it, saying it would be a Soto-like move if they could get him. And then you have Soto saying it would be one of the best trades that we could have. I know we have great pitching here, but adding a Cy Young winner like that would be huge. Soto did add it's going to take a lot to get him. Soto, again, if he goes to a team that has a chance to compete in the end, I think you're going to see who he is. He's doing that on a team that's no serious. So, I mean, this is a Soto. He's doing it on a team that has no serious chance to go to the playoffs, but he keeps trying and competing even without run support. Wherever he goes, whenever he goes to a winning team, you're going to see what Sandy Alcantara is capable of. Dude, I mean, these are like...
A very aggressive scouting report for somebody who's on another team.
Are you allowed to even do that?
Well, yeah, management couldn't quite do that. I don't think there's any sort of, you know, infringements on the tampering from a player perspective. You can say whatever you want. Maybe a little unethical.
Right.
Maybe not exactly well-received in the Marlins front office, but I don't think there's anything that could happen.
Feels weird. Now, Soto did compliment his own pitching staff, and we know what he would mean. Now, Alcantara, not just tied to potentially the Mets, also the Yankees. All right, so let's have the conversation, BT. Let's assume he becomes available. Mm-hmm. Let's assume both the Mets and Yanks want to go after him. From a Yankees perspective, I don't know if it's the right move because you just gave up a boatload to get Soto last year. You also invested heavily in money in the starting rotation. Are you now going to invest more resources, in this case, top prospect? Like, would you give up Lombard to get him?
That's one kid I don't want to give up.
But you would agree that it might
be a little different. Oh, yeah, you'd have to.
You probably
would, I don't
know
that I would, though.
Fair to talk about. And now, if it's not just a finance thing, a prospect thing, let's say the Yankees could go all in on Vlad Jr. or Kyle Tucker, maybe more likely next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tucker's going to be the guy.
Yep, I hope so.
All right, so... if the Marlins say, yeah, we'll give you Alcantara, but you got to give us Lombard as the centerpiece.
And I know the Yankees get Tucker.
Yeah.
That's different. Then you got
Well, you don't, you're not going to know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's a delicate dance. I would, listen, at the end of the day, I would be more inclined to give up somebody like Lombard for a position player. Like, maybe like a Vlad. Because these pitchers, you get one injury, you're done for the year.
That's the point, and we've been making this whole point. See, I think it's different for the Mets because they haven't invested a lot in starting pitching, whether it be prospect capital or finances. The Yankees have. It's a different story. Also, Alcantara, if you put him on the Yankees, would he help? Oh, of course he'd help any team. Is he the final piece? I don't look at him as being the final piece for the Yankees. I maybe would prefer a bat. I mean, we got to see how things shake out here. I do think Alcantara, you could argue, would be the final piece for the Mets, at least on paper right now. Again, you got to see.
I don't think you can make the argument that he's the final piece on paper for the Mets and not the final piece on paper for the Yankees.
See, but the Yankees already have an ace.
But he's hurt now.
No.
He's Fried. About Fried.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees
if you roll out Fried and Alcantara and say Schmidt heel, or I mean, that's then you got a hit, obviously, and I know October's pretty random, but geez, that team, if they can't win a World Series,
I get it.
The Yanks are never going to win a World Series.
I'm not saying it wouldn't help them, but the Yankees, the Mets to me are lacking a true top of the rotation starter.
I agree with that.
The Yankees they currently have one. They have one, the Mets have none, which is why I think he's more important that the Mets go out there and get. I don't think it's imperative the Yankees go out there and make that.
Okay,
move.
I'm playing literally off what you said. So that hits me a little different there. What I would say is, I would say that he is more, I'd stop short of imperative, but along those lines, of an acquisition for the Mets to make sure they're absolutely a playoff team.
Well, I think they're going to be a playoff team anyway.
I picked them under 90.5, so that's consistent with what I thought. But what I'm saying is, like, again, the first thing that's why I reacted the way I did. When you first said that, Alcantara on paper makes the Mets more of a World Series team than the Yankees. I don't feel that at all.
No, I feel like the Yankees are better in the rotation right now than the Mets are, which would mean that they're better suited to go take on the Dodgers, let's say, based on their current rotation, assuming Heal comes back.
Okay.
Freed, Heal, Rodon, than the Mets would be right now, even if Manaea comes back to go against the Dodgers.
I would agree with that.
Okay, so that's all that I'm saying. Now, obviously, it would make the Yankees better.
Okay.
And so let's just focus from the Yankees' perspective for a second.
Mm-hmm.
It would make the Yankees better, clearly.
I think it would make anybody better. Make the Tigers get him with that combination.
So that should go without saying.
Yep.
Then from a Yankees perspective, knowing that they've invested so many resources in that starting rotation already,
mm-hmm.
Rodon, Cole, Fried, all money, sure.
Yeah.
Would you then be willing to, on top of that, give up the prospect capital it would take to get Alcantara in here?
It's hard to answer that now. Because by the time this trade is made, and I do believe he'll be dealt this year, I don't know. But at least I'll have probably two more months of information on what's Dominguez right. look like, who is truly Volpe, who is Ben Rice real? I mean, to what degree? I'm not saying he's going to be Don Mattingly, but is he really truly viable? You know, is Austin Wells really as good as I think, and he's going to be an all-star? If you get more yeses to those questions than no's, then I'm a lot more willing to make it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? If
yes.
not, if I don't love the way these young position players are trending, I'm not looking okay. to get rid of a guy who, again, early read seems very different than many of their recent prospects who play positions.
Okay. Now let's do the Mets side of things.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to give up the prospect capital necessary to go get Alcantara if you're the Mets?
Yes.
That's kind of what I'm saying. It's not... You know what I mean?
I got you.
The
I
Mets
you
are now. In a spot
yeah,
where
yeah, yeah.
they, it's not that they're more desperate, but they have a clear area of need
mm-hmm.
in this particular department, which means if you ask me, would I give up Sproat, Jet Williams? What's it going to take? Probably that.
I think it'd take more than that.
Okay.
And with all those years that he's under contract?
All right, so
I said maybe four top 10 players.
All right, so I asked you Lombard, and you're saying,
I just happen to think he's a little different, like at a position that's going
to
be.
But you're entitled to say that. That's fine. If you ask me, give me the Mets' best guys. There's one guy that I wouldn't want to give up. And
Vientos.
No.
Oh.
Whoa,
you're not touching him.
He's an answer. Acuna. But if it's going to be the deal breaker, I do it.
Mm-hmm.
But so you name anybody that's in the Mets minor league system. I don't care which pitcher it is. Pick one of the pitchers. Pick your two players if you want. Jet Williams, you want, like I said, I wouldn't want to do it with Acuna, but I would if he were a deal breaker.
Yeah.
But I'd rather give up some of the other guys there. Gilbert, Jet Williams, whatever. You pick them, you could have them. I think the Mets are at that point
building. They need an arm like that. I don't disagree. You know, but the other thing too, Sal, like the money that the Mets have earmarked for Manaea, 2 years, that's going to be over before you know it.
Right.
Pete very well could opt out, and if he doesn't, after 2 years, in all probability, gone anyway. There's no money in the catcher right now. There's no money in center field. Soto, Nimmo, by the time, even though maybe a little overpay, a little extra year, whatever, but it's not a horrendous. There's no money invested in third base. Like, you could give up a ton of prospects from a Mets perspective and then just go out and then redistribute some of the money that you have allocated toward players now, like Pete and some of the others,
right.
that are going to expire, and go out and buy yourself a position player or two, whether it's a Vlad, whether it's a Tucker, whether it's somebody else that eventually hits the market. Somebody always does.
Right.
That's why I think that's a pretty viable route for the Mets. They need another arm.
Yeah, and it's almost the perfect spot for them because they need a top arm. They need an arm, period, but they need a top arm. And what are you going to do with all these prospects? It's great to say, oh, yeah, they have all these guys. There aren't enough spots on the diamond. Could you argue that Jet Williams could be their center fielder at some point this year or next year? Maybe. Okay, but that's one spot. And to your point, if you trade him, then just go find a center fielder with your money in the offseason or figure out another way to do it. Look at second base. Look at the amount of guys that we're talking about. Beatty, Acuna, Jeff McNeil, Mauricio potentially. You're throwing Gilbert to the equation, not at second base, but you
yep.
see what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
There are not enough spots
mm-hmm.
for everybody, which means that at some point, you're going to have to identify the ones that you believe are going to be starters at the major league level, and you're going to have to identify the ones that you are going to get rid of
yep.
or use best as trade chips. That's why I think it's a perfect match for
the Mets. But there's always a limit on, even somebody like Cohen, but there's always a limit on what you are willing to do in terms of the ridiculous contracts. Like, the Yankees, you had to go out and get Soto, but you gave up Michael King to do it,
right.
okay? There's only so many Michael Kings in the system.
Right.
And when you start to give those players away, granted, for an incredible talent, now Alcantara is not the pitching equivalent of Soto because there's just not as it's right. not quite the same. Alcantara is really good. Soto with certain things is all time with the on-base stuff. It's different, but I think you've got to be, and I think this is something Stearns will be great at. I think those first big trades, and I don't mean should we bring back Pete or those first big moves, do we bring back Pete, do we sign Alonso, Soto? Of course you try to sign Soto, obviously. I'm talking about the first massive trade that comes across his desk. I think he's going to be so adept and in tune with the minor league system, what they can't give up, what they think is overrated. I think that that might be one of his best attributes, and he hasn't really started playing that game yet.
Sal, tell the people it's not, Lindor's not using a torpedo bat. Here's the thing. I don't care what type of bat he uses. Get a hit, will you? I have March, April, and by the way, congrats to Francisco Lindor and family on the birth of their third child. You said it was Hoff, right? He had another daughter, so congrats.
A boy, right?
Okay, there you go. His first son. So congrats to Francisco Lindor.
Congrats.
Friend of the program, of course. We had him on last month or so. But it doesn't matter what type of bat you're using. And by the way, I'd be curious to see if he's on the lineup tonight after the birth of his son. Usually Lindor does not want to miss a game.
No.
Obviously, the Mets are on the road in Miami. I'm not sure where his wife is. I'm assuming back home, wherever that may be. Is it here in New York? Is it somewhere else? I really don't know the extent of it. But the game is later tonight. I think it's a 6:40 start, so maybe Lindor will be in the lineup, maybe not. Either way, BT, enough with the, it's fun to talk about the bats, and we will continue the conversation, but which individual is using them to me is irrelevant. It's more about does the bat give you an advantage? And there's no way you could prove that right now.
No, you can't prove it, but listen, anytime you get something like this, everybody's going to be an internet sleuth, and I mean, I'm looking at a picture right now from over the weekend,
right,
where Lindor is using a torpedo bat, but how the hell do I know? Is it photoshopped? I have no idea.
Okay, and then look at this one. Same thing. Somebody sent me this one.
All right, let's see.
And it looks the same color, same bat.
Yeah.
And what does that look like to you?
Is that a Marucci bottle? That looks like an M. Yeah, that looks like a torpedo.
It does to you?
Oh, wait, no, hold on. This one. No, that one looks a little more normal,
okay, so
actually.
So that's the point. So I get a picture of something that looks normal.
Compare it to mine here.
Yeah.
I found something, too, by the way. It says that New York Porch Sports says Lindor under investigation for chargeable torpedo bat with heat sensor on the barrel.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
They look like different bats here, Sal. Funny because the same colors, too.
But it might be a different bat.
Yeah, I guess it could be. That's true.
So I'm just going right to sources here. People that actually cover the team and see if we could figure that out. I don't know if I'll get a response or not. Here we go. Yeah, maybe. Okay. Exactly. I'm not going to say who I'm texting because I know multiple people there. But either way, is Lindor using a torpedo bat? The answer I got was maybe.
Maybe.
No, this is great. I'm not going to say who texted me this, but this is great. The answer was maybe, but the reporters are going to ask him today.
If he's there today.
True, if he is there today. The other part of it was, of course, Lindor can't hit with any bat until June anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, I know we're laughing about this.
That is a great line.
And it's about the torpedo stuff with the Yankees and now Major League Baseball. This is catching fire. What do you go, 0 for 11? I mean, it's just...
Is that what it is?
It's 0 for 11.
Oh, it is 0 for 11. Okay.
I mean, why can't he hit? Well, to start.
Well, one of the questions that I asked him when we had him on was, what are you going to do differently to combat these slow starts?
I think he said barrel up the ball.
Yeah, square it up.
Square it up.
Oh, maybe with a torpedo bat he could square it up. Again, who knows? But I really don't think, first of all, it's only a 3-game.
No, I understand that. I get it.
And I do think that last year, remember, it was a larger sample size. Also, he did not look good at the plate. I'm not getting that from him now. I do think he's had some quality at bats. It's 11 at bats. Now, you'd like one of these to drop, and maybe it could have made a difference in one of the ball games that the Mets lost 2 out of 3 in Houston. But there is something to it, and the worse it gets to start. Like, if he had a couple of hits, we wouldn't be discussing it. The fact that he's 0 for 11 brings it to the forefront again, and now there's going to be pressure on each at bat to get the job done. I'm not worried about Lindor, but it is immensely frustrating that he just can't hit in the beginning of the season.
Well, I think, yes, it is, because you paid to, produce from the start to the finish, and it's mystifying how this happens. Now, last year was, I think, as worse as it ever was. I don't know that it was quite that, but he was hitting like 090-something at one point. I don't think we go back down this road. I would think that a lot of the Mets get healthy this weekend, or not this weekend, starting tonight against the Marlins, who aren't very good. I know they won a couple of games earlier, but what are the Marlins doing this
year? They're leading the way in the NL East. I know.
I would think that he'll bang a few, and I would think that Pete will crank one out.
Well,
and, I would think that they'll start to get a little bit better with the bat.
I know it's just three games. I can't stand Pete in the three hole. I can't stand
I told you that before. I hate him there. Well, I don't like that at all.
But you think he's going to have a big year.
But I didn't like him in the three spot. And I said I would have put him four. I do not like him three at all.
By the way, our over-unders, which we will revisit at some point this week, because we were kind of, not that we were rushing it, but we were kind of...
Yeah, we blasted through him at the stadium.
We were up against it.
Yeah.
I was shocked that you took first Pete's over home run total.
35 and a half.
As your first pick.
And not Austin Wells.
Yes.
I know. Can I do a redo?
No. I was shocked.
Yeah. Well.
I thought the Wells number, because we talked about it before we went on the air, about maybe adjusting the numbers, because I looked at that and was like, this is not fair.
It was low.
17 and a half. I would have bet my house.
I know.
Well, injury, you
never know. Yeah. Here's what you want to know my thought process?
Yeah.
All right, I didn't think that you were as in on Wells as I was.
Okay.
Which now,
maybe I'm not, but at that number.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's kind of offset by the fact that the number's low, and you and I talked about that off the air, so I probably should have made that. Yeah, I should have changed my thought process. So I was thinking that I could get Wells with my next pick. I didn't think that you would gravitate to that so quickly.
Right.
Credit to you, you did. He's got two bombs.
And what
I think he's
going to
be an all-star this year.
Yeah, I know.
I really do.
What was Pete's number?
35 and a half. Now, again, I've been saying all winter, and I do this. When I just like with the Knicks from the first week, I'm like, it doesn't feel right. I have not changed my tune. Unless there's ample evidence that I'll happily change my tune. I have said all winter that I think Pete's going to really have a good year. So when I saw 35 and a half, I'm like, I think he's hitting 40.
Right.
I don't like him in a three hole, but I think he's going to hit 40. So I jumped on that because I thought that was unfairly low. And even though the Wells thing was low, I didn't think he would jump in so fast.
All right, that at least makes sense with the explanation there, but I am very happy to have Wells. And just the part about Pete, obviously, it's so early, you're not going to go nuts, but there are players, even when Soto doesn't get the job done.
Yeah.
Now, again, Soto's a different animal. We get that. But when he doesn't get the job done, even Vientos, he's a better example. Forget Soto because he's a different animal. Vientos, when he hasn't come through early on, he still gives you a good at bat. He's hitting the ball hard. I still have confidence in him because he looks confident up there.
Okay.
Pete is the opposite of that, and it drives me up a wall. Saturday night, I was watching it on the iPad because my wife was watching, you know, whatever other show we were watching Saturday night. I wanted to throw the iPad through the wall. He goes up there, he's got that long face, and then he's sulking and the head down after popping it up. I'm talking about the ninth inning there when they had a chance in the ninth.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, I can't watch Pete hit behind Soto all year long. I cannot do it. Soto gets on base. Vientos has to be the next guy up. I think they'll make that change eventually. They're not going to do it three games in. But eventually, Vientos is destined to be the three hitter.
Now, I hear you. Optics matter. There's certain athletes, when they don't do well, I need more. I know that this is crazy, but I know that everybody who's hearing this will agree. We need to know that when our athletes fail, that they feel it like we feel it. I know that that's twisted, man, because Pete's making $30 million a year. You know, he's going to probably set the Mets home run record this year. Who knows? If he cranks 500 home runs, he very well might be a Hall of Famer. Who knows? But it makes us feel our ROI, our return on our investment from a fan perspective. It just feels good when you see somebody like O'Neill. I knew watching Paul O'Neill, if he popped up with two on and nobody out, a helmet was getting smashed, a bat rack was getting punched, a bat was getting sawed in half, and it didn't change the result. He still popped up with two right. on and nobody out. But I'm like, that's okay. I know he loves it. I know he cares. I know Pete loves it, and I know Pete cares, but you got to be who you are. And we didn't, and I'm not even saying you're nitpicking on this because you've said this about Pete for a while.
Yeah.
But Pete's always been this guy.
Right.
We didn't have an issue with it when he was doing really well. Why have an issue now expecting him to deviate from who he is personality-wise?
Remember, this was a thing dating back to when Buck first took over and would say that, I know our guys care. They have that want to, as Buck used to say, the want to. But sometimes it was too much. That's my issue. That I know Pete cares and I know he wants it. But there's a certain attitude that you want. I'd rather it just be, I don't need him smashing Gatorade coolers or breaking bats over his knee.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a lack of real confidence there.
Oh, even, so it's not fire, it's more confidence.
Correct.
For me, I got you.
It's not the fire that O'Neal had.
Got it.
There is I believe, a confidence issue where he just gets down on himself too much.
Is this more of like a new development?
No, I think that
he's always kind of been this way.
Okay, and then, I feel like that's been the case, certainly at least since 2022, where even he had a good year, but just when things wouldn't go right, And then the last 2 years have not been up to his standards, and then the contract and all of where we're at. For me, the one thing that I would want to see change is at least his attitude and feel a little more, all right, here we are. I'm making the most money for any first baseman this year. I'm going to go out there and have a big season, especially after the big home run against Williams.
Yeah, he should be. And a couple against the Phillies. Yeah, he should be feeling good.
It's not the lack of emotion. He's got that. He had one of my favorite moments as a Mets fan was his emotion running around the bases after the home run for Williams.
How's it going?
He was just letting the raw emotion of a year, a frustrating year out. I love that from Pete. I think he cares too much. He almost tries too hard and gets down on himself too quickly when the result isn't there. And that shows me an unstable mindset that infuriates me. Whereas Vientos, I believe his confidence is unwavering. Obviously, Soto, you know, the sackometer off the charts. So that's unwavering. That's why I love those guys. That's just one of my, it may be nitpicky, sure.
No, you've said this before. I think it's a nitpick. I think it's just like what could he, outside of produce more, but like what could he do that would satisfy you in that moment?
Good question.
And I'm saying either put the ball in play, hit it hard, or you don't. I mean, he can do somersaults and dances, and he can break dance.
I just don't think he's that player that has the mentality that I would be looking for.
Not a money clutch guy.
He's had big moments. I don't think the pressure's too much for him. So
it's the reason why he got a 2-year deal with an opt-out, not a 7-year deal. And we've talked about this. We're not trying to turn on Pete.
No.
This is something you and I have said for a while.
No, but he's going to
I think Pete's
going to
have a good year, though. Yeah. I'm going to stick with that. He's going to hit home runs.
And I'm not sure about Nimmo either. Those two.
I'm not a big Nimmo fan.
No, I know that. And I have been. But, see, I like his attitude. And I like his mindset. The results need to follow. BT and Sal and the fan will come back. Get down with the king topic of the day. Those torpedo bats and the Yankees offense. 888-808-1019.
I'm a very rational guy. I'm a very calm guy. I don't like to get too nuts. I like to be very, very calm and measured when I speak. So I am going to be as measured as I can on this Thursday, April 3rd, 6 days into the season, when I tell all the Pete Alonso haters out there to kiss my fat ass. Because all of you people, whether it was Vladimir Guerrero Jr., or it was just simply berating a guy who's been here since 2019, making up false claims like, he's not clutch, he can't come through in a big spot, he's a net negative, we're better off without him. I thought he shut you up in October. I thought he shut you up against the Phillies and against the Dodgers, but no, in the offseason, I heard the same crap from you haters out there. And then yesterday, as the Mets were facing a 2-4 start, because Lindor doesn't hit in April, though he did have a base hit in the eighth inning, and because Mark Vientos is in la-la land, and because Juan Soto has cooled off a tad, and because the Met defense played with their heads up their ass, the Mets got saved by Pete Alonso. So I'm going to do my friend Pete a favor, because he won't do it. He's too classy. He's going to say what I'm going to say. Kiss his ass. And that includes you, Sean. So dial it up, 888-808-1019. I want apologies for my guy, Pete Alonso. I'm sorry, Pete. You're clutch, Pete. We love you, Pete. I'm sorry for making out publicly with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Pete. Or you can tell me it's April 3rd, Evan. You should calm down.
Well, it's not only it's April 3rd, Evan. You should calm down. We sat here 48 hours ago on the show, and you were making jokes that Eric Wagaman was batting third in the Marlins lineup. Can anybody name who's in this Marlins lineup? And now you want bouquets at the feet of Pete Alonso. And look, you can only control who you play, when you play, schedule, and all of that. It was a nice week for Pete, the Grand Slam earlier, and of course, yesterday's monumental moment. But it is the Marlins.
That doesn't matter.
And I understand.
That doesn't matter. The opponent doesn't matter, Sean.
The weight of his shoulders got lifted with the big home run versus Milwaukee. And obviously, whatever happened with the contract negotiations, maybe he's having a big middle finger toward everybody who didn't believe in him. But can we see a little more first than just the Marlins in April before we're crowning Pete Alonso
and
making comments anti-Vlad Guerrero Jr. and that free agency presence?
I must admit, and I did not tweet it out, nor am I going to actually give you the numbers, but I may have gone Baseball Reference and did the comparison through seven games and six games of Vlad and Pete Alonso.
Of course you did.
Just to prove my point. You know what it is? It is six games. And a win against the Marlins counts the same as a win against any other team. So I would argue that. I just think that yesterday's game, and we'll get to the Yankees on this a little bit later on as well. There are certain games in April and May and June that are just a little bit bigger than other games. It's 162 in a season, but there are games that are bigger. And if the Mets don't come back yesterday and they lose two out of three to those crappy Miami Marlins, I think the tone on this radio station and the tone in the Met community would have been very, very negative. And so what Pete did, which is something I think he's done throughout his Met career, so I don't think Pete's changed. I think Met fans have just changed, is he rescued them.
He did.
And I think that matters. So you can degrade the Marlins all you want. I'm not going to argue. The Marlins do stink. But I think that was a moment yesterday. And it's a moment that he's had before as a Met. And I want it to be a reminder to the Met fans out there that he's always been able to do this. And some of you people wanted to bury him last year because I'll admit, he didn't have a great year last year. But are we that quick to judge that a bad season, and it was, from a guy who's been here since 2019 is enough to define him? I don't think it was fair this year. So, yeah, maybe I'm a little over the top six games into the season, but what Pete Alonso is what he is. That home run, he's done before.
Right.
And so I just want to appreciate that as a New York Met fan and call out the haters.
And look, he has covered up a lot of the flaws we've seen with the Met lineup here to start the year, and especially this week in the series. You want to shut up the haters more, Evan? You want to make the comparisons more? Now what? Let's roll this over to this weekend in Toronto and give Vlad Guerrero Jr. a big middle finger on who the best first baseman is that's about to be again on the market.
I want to make this clear. I got no hatred towards Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Well, I think based on your first 5 minutes, you clearly want Pete here for the long term and not Vlad Guerrero Jr.
I think every Met fan, if we're all being honest with ourselves.
Not that we want to do free agent talk in April, but you know what I mean.
In a perfect world, we all want Pete Alonso here forever, but he needs to perform and Met fans need to believe. So I want Pete to be here forever, but it was a reminder that I don't think he's been fairly described over the last 6 months. I think Pete Alonso's been talked about in a way that's been incredibly unfair. And I don't know if you remember. I do remember this. I don't remember every show we've ever done or everything we've ever said on the radio, though you may think I do.
You don't transcribe every single word that's ever coming out of every one of our mouths for 2 years?
Sometimes I do. But I'll never forget the show we did before Game 3 against the Brewers when Pete Alonso was at his bottom as a New York Met.
Yes.
He had a down season, which I admit. He was bad in the first two games. It was not a good sign for Pete Alonso. And I said on the radio during that open with Tiki, with you, with Tommy, I said, I believe in Pete, not because I'm just trying to be happy or positive like positive Tommy. I believe in Pete because he's done it before. I know it's in him. And what we've seen through six games, while it's different than last year, to me is not that different from 2019 or that different from 2022 or that different from 2021. So I always knew it was in him, and maybe it is signing the new contract even though it's not long term. Maybe it was the home run against Devin Williams last year. I don't know what the moment was, but Pete Alonso is feeling like the old Pete Alonso, and I'm here for it.
And one thing that I think we can all agree on, whether you want to argue, oh, just the Marlins, oh, these aren't really big moments.
That was you, by the way, not me.
I understand that. I'm having an argument with myself.
Okay.
Look, one nitpick everybody had about Alonso and what happened last year was the advanced numbers tell you at his age, he's going to start the decline. We've already seen the best of Pete Alonso. And sometimes in baseball, a down year is just that, a down year. And I think at least early on, the one thing you could probably hang your hat on is we might have overreacted to that part of it and that there's still plenty of good years in the bat of Pete Alonso.
Well, I think that, and this is fair because numbers matter. Pete Alonso had three consecutive years in which he was declining.
Right.
Okay, that's just stats. And to me, OPS is a very important stat, and that number went down three consecutive years. His home runs went up from 22 to 23, but his average went way down, his on-base way went down, his slugging went down. Bottom line was, yes, he was on a decline for 3 years. And a lot of people just assumed that 27, 28, 29, oh, that just must mean that's what's happening because of age.
Right.
That's not always the case. Sometimes it's not necessarily related to, well, he's getting older and he's getting worse. Because I've also seen Pete Alonso get better defensively. And what I've seen already this season is Pete having just better at-bats. I mean, you saw this on opening day when he had three at-bats in which he got to full counts. When he was fouling pitches off like we saw yesterday right before the big three-run home run. So sometimes it's as boring, and I admit it's boring, as a mechanical adjustment. Sometimes it's just bad habits that are created. I just know this as a New York Met fan. Seeing Pete Alonso do what he did yesterday was important for two reasons. Number one, 2-4 would have sucked going into the Met home opener.
Definitely.
And number two, all you trolls need to kiss his ass. That's the other thing. Because I am sick and tired. And even you, Tommy. I love you, bro. You are a part of it slightly. You're not the biggest culprit. Obviously, there are others, like Sal Licata. But here's why you're part of the culprit-cy, if you will.
Yeah, please explain.
You continued during this offseason to say a name that pisses me off, and that's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's not on this team. Mm-hmm. Pete is. Mm-hmm. Stop dreaming about him and be positive about our guy.
Oh, Evan, you just never learn.
I didn't like that, Tommy, because it's disloyal to Pete.
No, it is not. In the Steve Cohen era, it's about and. It's not about or. I always said Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Peter Jefferson Aloysius Alonso.
You know why that's not true? Because
it's literally true. I said, oh, you mean what I... It's true that I didn't say it, or no. It's not what I'm saying is not true.
So your wife, who's a lovely, lovely lady.
Well, I don't know what she has to do or anything.
Loogie!
You'll see, it'll all make sense. Your wife is a lovely lady, okay? You have also spent time on the radio openly pining for one Sydney Sweeney.
Oh, yeah. Okay? And she's available now. Vlad.
And she's available. When you pine for Sydney Sweeney, and it's funny, and we all laugh about it, do you think your wife sits there and says, oh, don't worry, he means me and Sydney Sweeney? Or does she think to herself, wait a second, he's talking about replacing me for Sydney Sweeney. What do you think she thinks? Not what your intention is, not what your fantasies are, because God bless you. What do you think she thinks, Tommy?
I think she thinks...
Checkmate, by the way.
This is why my husband pushed for a guest room. Sydney or my wife could get the guest room, and then Sid or my wife could have the main bedroom with me. I could go up and down.
Did you call her Sid?
Sid.
He's that close. You know what's funny? You say you remember certain things from this show and everything, and they're sports related. Yeah. I actually vehemently know that Tommy said he would pay his wife off if he won the lottery.
He did say that.
So that it was not an end situation.
Yeah, exactly. I believe the phrase was, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out.
And that phrase that you use so eloquently about your wife is the same phrase you have used about Pete Alonso.
You and I need to have a three-way.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. Pete is Tommy's wife in this case.
So I use that analogy.
Vlad and Sydney Sweeney, both the same size breasts, too, if we're being honest with you.
Oh, jeez.
You and I need to have a three-way.
Okay.
Enough already.
As I've said on the air here, I've said it on the Rico, I've made a bold prediction, if you will, that the Mets are going to get Sandy Alcantara before the trade deadline. I believe that will happen. The Marlins have already shown they don't care about trading inside the division. They did it with Jesus Luzardo. And plus, like, my reasoning behind it, again, Evan Roberts' brain is reporting, which has not always done the best for me. But the reason why I believe that strongly is that he signed for multiple years. And David Stearns doesn't want to give out long-term contracts to guys in their 30s. Well, if you trade for Alcantara, you have him this year, next year, and the year after. If you trade for Dylan Cease, he's a free agent at the end of the year. So I believe that the Mets will go all out to try to trade for Sandy Alcantara. And I'll say it again here on April 2nd. The Mets will end up with Sandy Alcantara. I really believe that. This is the trade that David's been waiting to make. I believe he'll make it.
Okay.
Thank you. Just putting that out there for the 15th time. I've said it a lot. I apologize. I'm not going to harp on it the way that Arenado.
Right.
But just... I'm letting you know again in case you forgot.
Okay. Unless somebody else comes and snoops.
They could. I just don't think they will. Okay. Honestly, I think this is the perfect deal for the Mets. So Mike Puma, who's a fine reporter, Puma did nothing wrong here, starts asking Met players about Sandy Alcantara since, A, he agrees with me, the Mets are probably going to trade for him.
And they just played against
him. And they faced him yesterday. Listen to these open comments and tell me how this is not like, I don't know, dirty. Here's what Juan Soto said about trading for Sandy Alcantara. It would be one of the best trades that we could have. I know we have great pitching here, but adding a Cy Young winner like that would be huge. It's going to take a lot to get him. Francisco Lindor. It would be almost like adding Juan Soto. You add Soto, it's going to help the team. You add Alcantara, and it's going to help the team. Starling Marte, part-time player, by the way. He has the stuff and the mental makeup to be able to play in New York. He's got the mental strength and physical gifts to be able to have success here. And I think we have shown that we help pitchers even more. How is this okay? Like, how is it okay? And I have another issue with it. But just on
That's
the level,
man.
How is it okay to openly be talking about a player on another team?
I feel like in the NFL, there are tampering rules. And you never hear players talking about other players on other teams. Like, oh, I want him to come here. And if it is, it's kind of just on social media, like them, I don't know, reaching out. Hey, that's my boy. Come play with me type of thing.
Right.
But you never really see it in media. And I know it's explicit in the NFL because you just can't. You hear coaches like talking their ways out of like plastic bags or paper bags trying not to talk about other teams. But in baseball, there is tampering rules, correct?
Apparently not to the players, because I don't think anyone's going to get in trouble. And even if there aren't rules, there does seem something unethical about it. There's something dirty about it.
Or it's just the nature of the game. Because it happens. Like, everybody knows this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily to the Mets, but everybody knows that at some point Miami is moving off of Sandy Alcantara.
That is the belief in the industry,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so like, it's just an accepted thing in the industry, so why not make it an open conversation?
Right.
So I think it's just a culture of baseball thing.
There was,
it wouldn't fly in the NFL.
Well, here's what else is weird about it. Even if the players are allowed to talk about it, okay, the 25 guys in your room or 26 guys in your room are still your teammates. And I understand we got Manaea bad news yesterday. Aren't you, as Juan Soto or whatever Met is talking about this, in essence, begging your team publicly to take a job from a guy that you're staring at in a locker room?
No,
because I think those other guys, I think in most sports, you kind of know where what you're supposed to be doing.
Like, okay.
You know what you're
saying. Yeah, I don't have an issue. I don't have an issue with that, because I think that you're just saying he's a great player, and it's the Mets' decision. It's David Stern's decision on who would be the odd man out. But there was something else Juan Soto said that actually did rub me slightly the wrong way. And I'm going to preface this by saying Juan Soto did not lie. Juan Soto told the truth. And sometimes the truth is just, I don't know if you should say it. Talking about Sandy Alcantara, if he goes to a team that has a chance to compete at the end, I think you're going to see who he is. He's doing that on a team that has no serious chance to go to the playoffs, but he keeps trying and competing even without run support. Whenever he goes to a winning team, you're going to see what Sandy Alcantara is capable of. My issue is, yes, we all agree the Marlins aren't any good. They're not trying to win. They're in your freaking division.
Bulletin board material.
They just beat you, by the way. Like, I don't know if we should be openly talking about how they have no chance to win when you've got to play 11 more games against them.
Yeah, and, you know, technically they're sitting atop the division right now.
Technically they are, yeah. They're right. that isn't even my worry.
I know
that they're not going to be good. It's just such a weird thing to say. Like, who says that?
That just tells you the state of baseball.
I agree.
Even the players know.
Yeah.
Dude, your team stinks.
I don't think anyone would say that in the NFL.
No chance. Because you don't know what could happen.
Right.
You could be the worst. You could start the season. What did the Lions do that one year? They started the season 1-6?
When they rallied and knocked the Packers out?
1-8 or whatever it was. And they ended up winning 8 games in a row. Whatever the heck the season was. But, like, in football, you can turn it. Something could happen. Whether your quarterback gets hot or you I don't know, you find some diamond in the rough that you didn't think was going to be good.
1-6.
Yeah, 1-6, and then they almost made the playoffs. I think they just missed the playoffs that season. And so football, you just can't say you stink and you're going to stink all season long.
Right.
Baseball, you kind of know it.
But you know what? You really don't, because baseball is a sport where miracles happen.
Okay, but when was the last projected bottom seed division, you know, team win the division?
Honestly, go back to last year. I don't think the Brewers were expected to be any good. They won the National League Central.
Yeah, but
the Marlins a few years ago made the playoffs. They weren't supposed to be good.
But that's the Central.
I know the East is good, and it's not about winning the division. It's about being a playoff team. The Marlins were a playoff team a couple of years ago.
Royals last year, too.
Yeah, I think the Royals are coming off a 100-loss season. I think people thought they'd be better, but I don't know if they picked them necessarily to make the playoffs. I think it's common in baseball. Mm. And again, I'm not worried about the Miami Marlins. It's more saying that 5 games into a season.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
sort of disrespectful.
No, sort of. It absolutely is disrespectful.
With all of that said, I do think at the end of the day, when we're sitting here in late July, I think Sandy Alcantara is going to be a Met because I think David Stearns has waited for that moment. This is the reason I believe it. It's the reason I made it a big prediction a couple weeks ago is because sometimes things just make sense.
Yeah.
And I don't believe the Mets ever want to trade for a guy who that they then have to give $200 million to, which would be the case with Dylan Cease. Mm-hmm. Sandy Alcantara is signed for the next 3 years in the prime of his career. And we'll see about Schauman himself.
But that would be 2 years post-trade,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, it's this year and two more years.
Right.
And I think that's perfect. That's kind of the contract Stearns wants to give out. Mm-hmm. That's what they signed Schauman to, three-year deal. So I think it's so perfect in their whole timeline and their philosophy around pitchers. And the reason why the Marlins are in a hurry to trade him, obviously they could keep him. They could try to win for the next 2 years, but they also know that there's no way they're going to re-sign him at the end of that contract right. in 2.5 years.
Right.
So you may as well try to get the maximum value. And the maximum value is right now, especially if he pitches well. Let's get back to your calls, 888-808-1019. Evan is calling from Randolph. How are you, Evan?
Hey, I just wanted to ask about the Yankee game last night. And, you know, because I have these moments where I say to myself, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm smarter than Aaron Boone.
Go ahead.
And so I just don't understand why, you know, Weaver's only pitched one game this season so far. Why can't he go out there for a 4-out save? Why was Weaver never brought, you know, up to start throwing in the pen? Yeah.
So I agree with the idea, and I mentioned this earlier if you're just tuning in, that I believe that you should use your best reliever in the most important part of a game. And sometimes that's not the ninth inning. Sometimes it's the eighth inning. Sometimes it's the seventh inning. Last night in the Yankee game, the most important inning, especially with guys on base, was that eighth inning. And so without Devin Williams, they were kind of penciling in Luke Weaver as the closer. Well, I look at a closer as the best reliever that I'm going to use in the highest leverage of spot. So I agree with you. I would have used him last night. I wouldn't have even gone to Mark Ladder. I would have gone to Luke Weaver in the eighth inning with two on and one out. Boone didn't.
Right. He was saying after they got Naylor, after he struck out Naylor.
Yeah.
And why not bring him in then?
You could have done that then. Right. I would have done it even earlier. I don't know if Boone wants to extend him this early in the season, but my argument against that is I'm not even with Evan where I need a 4-out save. I'm just looking at him to get the most important outs, and then I'll worry about the ninth inning later.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example on why I think managers need to do this. So let's say he goes to Luke Weaver and he puts the fire out. And he throws a bunch of pitches, but he puts the fire out and it's a one-run game. What happens if in the bottom of the eighth inning the Yankees score 5 runs?
Right.
Then you can take Luke out.
Yeah.
If it's still a one-run game, yeah, you got a decision. Do you keep him in? Do you extend him? He may not be available the next 2 days. Or do you take him out and take the risk that Mark Leiter can get the save? Tough decision, but at least put yourself in a spot where you get to make that decision.
Right.
Drives me nuts about managers. So the game isn't on Aaron Boone, obviously. It's just a philosophical thing.
Philosophical.
Philosophical thing, yeah. That's all. That's all it is. Me and Boone are still good, even though he threatened to throw me in a locker earlier on the show today. I still like the guy. Let's go to Gabe in Wayne, New Jersey. What's up, Gabe?
What up, Gabe?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. So, look, I'm a rational Yankee fan, not like these doomsday fans, you know, these crazies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that spirit, I can say after the fourth game of the year, season's over. All right? Season
Come on.
Is over.
Stop
all
it.
Right?
Stop it, Gabe.
And guys, look, I'm half kidding here, right? But how about the themes that we see that have plagued the Boone Yankees, right? So, like, one, bullpen management. The caller brought it up before. You guys were talking about it earlier. Boone loves analytics, but misses the fact that Leiter sucks in the eighth inning or with runners on base or in pinstripes. Take any of those three, and, you know, it says that he's not good in that situation, right?
Yeah.
So then number two, you got the offense, right? You said that the offense was exciting, all this kind of stuff. Besides three solo home runs, they went limp. Where are the torpedo bats? Torpedo bats were 1-for-20 with 10 strikeouts and one home run. Where's the contact mentality? I get that they faced the ace. I get that the Diamondbacks
got to the
ace. Guys in the pen.
They did a good job against the ace. They couldn't hit the bullpen.
They got to him.
That was the problem.
So how are they not winning that game and taking smarter at bats? Jazz Chisholm striking out 4 times, looking for the moon. Like, I mean, come on. What's gonna be the trigger that changes the mentality of this team?
Gabe, I love you.
It's early in the season.
You were talking about a game in which, yes, 2, 3, and 4 did nothing. Judge and Chisholm were 0-for-8 with 6 strikeouts.
1-for-5 didn't have a hit.
Yeah, 1-through-5 didn't have a hit. By the way, do you know what they call 0-for-8 with 6 strikeouts? There's actually a term now. 0-for-8 with 6 strikeouts is a term now.
It's a...
Nope. You're not going to get it. Maybe Sean will get it.
It's a Met?
No, it's called a Devers.
Yes.
A Devers. Yeah.
when you have a lot of at-bats and you strike out in 75% of them.
He didn't even hear me.
What did you say?
I heard you either.
Yeah, what'd you say?
I said, they call it a Met.
Oh, a Met.
Oh, damn it. Good job, Teak.
Oh, jeez. It's not that we're striking out all the time.
I know, I'm just joking.
Tiki felt like me at Cinco yesterday.
Alcantara is kind of on the trade market. The Mets were very open when asked about it, wanting to trade from Soto, Lindor. Everybody talked about how, you know, the presence he has on the mound, how great he is and everything. And so it's kind of asked this question about like whether or not they could trade for him. And I honestly think like there's a Met Yankee thing to everything now. And we're having this conversation about Mets and Yankees. And I've been, you know, I'm a Yankee guy, Yankee fan. And I would tell you that the future, there's no, I don't believe that the future is so much brighter for the Mets and the Yankees. I don't believe that, you know, the Mets are going to go on this great run and capture the city while the Yankees are floundering here. Like some of the narratives I think are stupid. But what I will tell you is, both with need and ability, the Yankees don't have a prayer to get Sandy Alcantara. Like, you just have to understand where they are as a team right now. The farm system is not there. That's why I want to go out and make trades like Nolan Arenado and make it just about money. And if you've seen Nolan Arenado, I was screaming about this. He's having a great start to his year. Tom Verducci did this whole thing on how his bat speed has picked up, how much harder he's swinging the bat, the contact he's making. It was the first time in 3 years he's caught up to a 98-mile-an-hour fastball up in the zone. It's been 3 years since hit a home run for. It's the first time in 3 years he's hit a home run with a 98 fastball or better up in the zone. He's picked up his bat speed. He's had a great start to the year. I want Nolan Arenado here. They're in desperate need of a right-handed bat. He should have already been here. Go get him. That's just money. Sandy Alcantara is going to take some of the biggest prospects in your farm system, and the Yankees don't really, they're not going to trade. The Cashman's not going to do it, especially when they just invested so much money between Rodon 2 years ago, how much money Cole is making. They just paid Max Fried all this money. They're not going to invest all the money and all their prospects like Lombard and maybe Jason Dominguez, because that's what it's going to take to get a 29-year-old superstar, you know, ace starting pitcher. The Yankees are out. Yankee fans, don't even think about it. Don't consider it. There'll be moves at the deadline. It's not going to be for a starting pitcher that level. They've invested money in it. They don't have the prospects. You're not going to invest all your money and all your prospects into your rotation, where the rotation, let's be fair, has been minimized in baseball. But the Mets, on the other hand, have to go out and do it. That's the perfect move for the Mets, right? You built up this farm system. You did what you did with Scherzer and Verlander to acquire assets. You've got really no real holes at the major league level offensively. You got these guys all playing infield, like, and you don't want to invest money into the starting pitching. Go trade for Alcantara. He's 29. You've got him a year before 30. Like, he's gonna, obviously it's what you're desperately in the need for at the top of the rotation. It's a perfect fit for the Mets. They should absolutely go do it. And just, you know, they're in a position where they can go do it. And I screamed about this, you know, at the start of the year with Crochet. Go get these young starting pitchers, because you don't want to, you either have to develop them or trade for them because you don't want to pay them. So I think Sandy Alcantara absolutely should be a Met. That should be their number one focus. The team seems to be open to it and understanding. I mean, they've probably all been discussed as open as Cohen and Stearns are with some of their superstars. Those comments felt almost directed, much like, you know, Nimmo was saying, you know, we should buy, you know, at the deadline 2 years ago. So, or last year, rather. It almost feels like they're open to it because they know that the team is open to it. So the Mets should absolutely go out, make a trade for Sandy Alcantara. The Yankees, I don't think the future is this dystopic, horrible, you know, barren wasteland, but I also don't think they're in a position right now to go trade for a top starting pitcher. I wouldn't even think they'd consider it. They're going to probably look for relievers if they're going to look for arms, and they're probably going to look for a bat, which they desperately need. 888.
Now you have the setback with Manaea, and now he's going to be shut down from throwing for 2 weeks. There's inflammation in that oblique. The obliques can be tricky. I don't see where the Mets can replace Sean Manaea here. Now, it's not that I don't trust David Stearns and the pitching staff, because I do to a certain extent, But I really think a major key, at least right now, the way that this roster looks, they need Sean Manaea healthy, and now that's not going to be the case for a while.
Okay, I heard this in the car yesterday coming home with Evan and Tiki, and my first reaction is different than my reaction now. My first reaction was much like you, fairly ominous. You're getting the injections, you're getting shut down at least for 2 weeks before you touch a ball, and then you got to ramp back up if there's no setbacks again. I don't think we see Sean Manaea till June. It could be July. But I got to tell you, the more I thought about this, I don't want to say that it's not a big deal, because it could be. But it's not a shoulder. It's not an elbow. Sean Manaea is going to pitch this year, okay? And the Braves still haven't won a game here. Like, I'm watching the Mets last night, and to me, this might just seem weird or just, I don't know, almost like a contrarian perspective, but it's really not. I would rather get the news about Manaea that we got yesterday from a Mets perspective than seeing Senga go out there last night and either really labor and pitch. Well, if Lindor, you know, doesn't boot the ball around, he pitches a great game. It sounds worse than it is. Manaea's going to pitch this year. I don't think it's a massive deal.
The problem is for me, and I love hearing that, and I don't think it's debilitating to the regular season, but one of the keys for me was Sean Manaea, because he's... Look at that rotation. Who's got the potential that Sean Manaea has? I don't believe anybody in the current rotation, including Kodai Senga, has the potential that Sean Manaea has, especially what he's shown in the second half of last year, changing the arm angle.
By the way, I'd probably agree with that. Okay. Keep going. I probably agree.
So then also look back to Manaea's history, where last year was really an outlier. I mean, Manaea has shown flashes before, especially early on in his career, but he's also been a pitcher that has been off injured. And you had him last year throw, you know, 100 and whatever it was, about 181 innings. He never did that before in his entire career. So maybe a byproduct of that, 181 innings and postseason, all that stuff, is going to be potentially a lost year. I'm not trying to project when he's coming back, but let's say he comes back on time and there are no more setbacks. Then the question is, okay, well, is he going to be full throttle what Manaea was a year ago? Is there going to be time to, you know, build that up? Is he going to be good to go in the postseason? With a guy who's been injured before, a guy who threw his career high in innings last year, I don't think it's unrealistic to maybe brace yourself for, hey, maybe it's just going to be a lost season for Manaea, even if he comes back. Who knows if you could count on him to be that ace that he was in the second half of last season.
Yeah, but even if he started the season healthy and there was no setbacks, and you might be right, there might be some residue from being overly taxed a year ago, hitting the 180-plus threshold, and he's never been there before. I still don't know that there was any sort of guarantee that Sean Manaea just slotted into this top of the, well, certainly top of the rotation, but this borderline unhittable, you know, all-star ace. I think for me, there was still not many questions, because I do like him. And I think with the change in windup, I think it's just enhanced what's already a pretty good repertoire in terms of what he throws. Now he conceals the ball. I think it adds up. I think Manaea is really good. You know, I like him.
Right.
But let me ask you this. Do you not think, and I think it's a pretty simple question, do you think he doesn't pitch this year?
I think he'll pitch at some point.
So do I.
Because to your point, I think it's a good one about the shoulder, the elbow, none of that. This is an oblique. Okay.
So do I. But, he's going to pitch this year.
Okay, but I think it's fair to have concerns, even if he were 100% healthy coming into the year. Like, is it fair to say that last year might have been the outlier? A lot of us believed that it was legit when he found the new arm angle. He looked dominant. But what he did last year, he did for the first time in his career. He had the best ERA, I believe, in his career, outside of the, you know, a year where he didn't pitch a full season. He had the best year of his career ERA-wise and innings pitched. Is it fair to expect that again? I don't know. So I think there were some question marks coming in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the injuries on top of it, I don't think you can count on Sean Manaea. Maybe that's the best way I could say it right now, to where I was ready to count on him coming into the year.
Yep.
And then even after the initial oblique, it's like, all right, it's not that bad. He'll come back and we can count on him. Once something like this happens, now I think it's too murky. And I just would say that I hope for the best. I expect him to get back at some point, but I would not be relying on him or counting on him to be that top of the rotation guy this year.
Okay, so I watched the first 2 months of the season last year, a Yankee rotation without Gerrit Cole do things that, I mean, I didn't think they had any chance to do. Now, I'm not saying that the Mets will absolutely replicate that, but, you know, baseball's a weird sport. And Kodai Senga was not around for the Mets last year. And I know it's easy to get wrapped up in, well, is he truly a gamer? Well, everything's got to be perfect.
He's a pain in the neck, dude. He needs his rest.
I know. It's annoying and tricky to work around. But, you know, Kodai Senga, when he's on the mound, is at the lowest level serviceable, and at the highest level sometimes unhittable. So that's an early return that, all right, again, very early return. Again, Lindor's not going to make two errors. It may, maybe the rest of his career in a single game. So at least Senga's out there, and he looked pretty good. Peterson, you know I like him. McGill looked good. And I'm not a big Tyler McGill fan, but he did have a really good spring training, and he did pitch really well this first start. You know, the hardest thing to do, I think especially in baseball, Sal, is to escape either previous narratives or statistical trends, because we're so numbers-oriented and our eyes are very strong tools that it really takes, when I say us, I mean me, you, fans, everybody, us, collectively as fans, it's hard to disassociate our brains from what we've seen for a while, but there is a chance that Tyler McGill is going to be an asset this year. There's a chance.
Yeah, I know. I don't trust him.
I'm not leaning on it, but there's. I get it. I'm not saying I trust him either.
Right.
But there's a chance that while I don't trust him, I'm not just going to throw him to the side and say he's got no chance. I'm going to take a wait and see, because he did have a good spring and he has shown some growth. I like Peterson. And listen, I think tonight might be one of, this is going to sound ridiculously hyperbolic, I think tonight's one of the bigger starts that a Met will have over the next couple of months. I need to see not seven innings, zero runs, nine whiffs, and one walk, but I need to see Clay Holmes bounce back, and I believe that he will. And if he does, I do believe the Mets will be able to navigate what's going to be an extended run without Sean Manaea.
I trust David Stearns. I think you'd be a fool not to at this point. Now, it's one time through this rotation this year, but still, the one time looks pretty good. He also had all of last year. I just feel like, remember, coming into the year, it was built with Manaea and Montas in mind, and the other guys that we're seeing now, Griffin Canning, Tyler McGill, they were supposed to be depth pieces. Yeah. Now, you know, Montas not here for a while at least. Manaea, and you could say that he's going to come back. We don't know. Yeah, we assume he's going to come back. We thought the same thing last year with Kodai Senga. He came back, got hurt again. He ended up missing the whole year. So there's always that thought of, oh, maybe he'll come back. There's a lot of question mark. And if I'm saying in my mind I can't rely on Manaea, now that leaves you thin in that rotation where there is no more wiggle room. Blackburn may come back at some point soon, but, I mean, it's Blackburn.
I'm not counting. He's the one guy when they got him. Okay. I'm like, I don't know about him.
But Blackburn, Canning, McGill,
yeah.
Peterson, Holmes is converted. You know, there are a lot of, they're lacking depth now because of the two injuries. They're lacking a true horse atop that rotation, and their margin for error just became basically zero in the rotation, because if something else were to go wrong, and it's April 2nd or whatever it is today.
I get that.
If something else were to go wrong in that rotation, now again, I'm not saying it's going to torpedo the Mets season, but this is where, this would be the one guy in that rotation that I wouldn't want to have any kind of significant issue, and it seems like that's the case with Manaea after the setback.
Okay, so the fact that the Braves lost again, they're 0-6, you got to love it, Mets fans. The fact that they're 0-6 and the Dodgers smacked them around and they've got pitching issues.
Yeah,
and
the Mets will hit, that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's where I was going. Like, don't you think, because I remember saying to you a lot, I believe, and it's been the opposite so far, though I do think it will correct itself somewhat. Fully, I'm not sure, but somewhat, yes. Where I think the Mets would, or I thought the Mets would have to win some slugfest early. I've said that. 8-7, 7-6. Do I believe that Alonso's going to hit 160 or whatever? No. Nimmo's showing some signs. I mean, Lindor, the usual April funk. Right. I mean, Soto's hitting 250. We know he's not a 250 hitter. He's basically more like a 315 hitter. He's great. So I think that the Mets right now, and I understand the concerns, but I think when you take a step back and incorporate the other team's issues, again, I'm not saying it's not a big deal with Manaea. It's not the end of the world, because he wasn't even going to start the season healthy. I knew he was missing April, so what? Now he's going to miss May. Deal with it. You'll be all right.